We now complete our tapestry of this elusive notion of trust in our courtrooms and judiciary system, where we expect a fair trial in criminal matters, a fair hearing for a civil grievance, and an interpretation of the laws untethered from politics. We cling tightly to the idea that a witness to a crime is among the best evidence in a criminal case. But as witness MD shows in the Rodney Lincoln murder case we just discussed, the reliability of witness testimony is more than just questionable. Julia Shaw is the author of The Memory Illusion, Remembering, Forgetting, and the Science of False Memory. Memories, she says, come in pieces that can easily be manipulated and distorted by others.
You can only distinguish between a false memory and a true memory. And you could even say between a false memory and a lie, because they all look the same to the observer, by looking at the process through which a memory was recalled. So you can't really just look at an account and say, ooh, that happened or that didn't happen, or this person believes it happened or is lying about it. But what you can do is you can look at the process. And the process in particular that you want to look for is a leading or suggestive interview. So if someone has suggested to the person, let's say you're sitting at the dinner table and your mom suggests to you that you did something when you were a kid, and you go, I don't really remember that happening. But she goes, no, I'm sure that you went to Disneyland. And maybe she starts telling you some details. Now, if you think about it enough, it's easy enough to picture a situation where you would have gone to Disneyland and to sort of flesh it out. Now, that imagination, the next time over the dinner table you're talking about Disneyland, you might go, oh, yeah, I went there when I was a kid, and here's what happened. So essentially that suggestion by someone you trust to know more about your life than you do can be internalized, and you can weave a creative story around it that makes sense to you.
And your recall reinforces it, thereby etching it further into your memory.
Exactly, to the point where you can't tell the difference between a false memory and a real memory, and neither can other people without independent evidence. So even when we have evidence that suggests, so sometimes people will show each other photos and say, oh no, but you're not in these, like, you couldn't have been there. And yet people sometimes still go, no, but I remember it so clearly. And this is really important. That just because someone says something with confidence and with emotionality and thinks that they have a lot of details doesn't mean that an event necessarily happened. Research consistently shows how easy it is to convince people of complex, emotional, important life events that didn't take place.
Do juries buy the brain's version of this or your research?
It's easy to intuitively think that A, well, false memories might not happen, or B, maybe this person's lying. Juries and the justice system in general often don't really understand how memory works. And this is something that's really important to me to highlight in my book, is to really give people an understanding of what's going on up there. It's something we rely on every single day. And yet, what do people really know about how memory works, how they're formed, what they look like in the brain, and how malleable they are? And so with jurors and with judges even and lawyers, the key is kind of conveying an understanding as to what's actually happening. And when you understand that memories are networks in the brain and these networks can be changed and constructed and reconstructed, then you understand that memories naturally change. And that when we see, you know, an eyewitness say something in a courtroom, we need to be careful about that memory, and we need to be careful not to place too much weight on individual details.
What insights does your research give us to the terribly disturbing cases? There were a whole raft of cases in the United States and some even in the UK when adults claim childhood memories of abuse that turn out to be false, even when they're about their parents, their accusations against their parents.
So cases of so-called historical childhood sexual abuse are cases that I actually work on quite regularly, where I look at a case where someone claims that, usually the parent person who's being accused, my child or my son or daughter has gone to therapy and come back with a false memory where they think that I've sexually abused them. Now, these are cases where they're all adults. So the claimants and the complainants and the defendants are both adults. Usually the complainant is about 30 years old and the person who's defending against this is about 60, according to studies that I'm actually currently running. This is where it gets really iffy, is that if you go to bad bad types of therapy. Therapy that is known to use leading or suggestive techniques like hypnosis or regression therapy, repression therapy. You find that people sometimes come out with false memories where they are convinced that terrible things happened to them, even if you sometimes can go back and show your dad wasn't even in the country when you allege this happened, or this is impossible because you say that satanic, horrible things happened, but there's no evidence, there's no scarring, there's nothing that should have resulted from these alleged terrible events. So essentially the victims here are both the people who come out of therapy thinking that they've experienced horrible things, and subsequently the parents who are wrongfully accused. So again, it's not a lie. It's not that these people are coming out of therapy with a lie. It's that they genuinely believe that terrible things happened to them. And of course, understandably, then tell their parents about it and sometimes take it to court.
What did you think of that great movie, The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which suggests that in fact, memory can be just sort of, resorted, kind of like, paint on a canvas?
Well, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind sort of posited that we could maybe erase an entire person out of our memories and all the experiences we've had with them. Now, I would argue that that's never going to be possible. I mean, the things that we normally want to erase aren't actually the sort of facts, aren't the experiences. It's the emotional piece of the experience we want to erase. So we want to erase the sadness. We want to erase maybe fear or anger. And so that's something that is possible and that's currently happening, that we're potentially helping treat people with things like PTSD by removing the emotional piece of a memory. So that's a much smaller thing to remove rather than trying to access a whole network, because memories are all over the brain. I mean, they're really complex. And so thinking that we can just pluck one out entirely is difficult.
Julia Shaw is author of The Memory Illusion. She's a senior lecturer in the Department of Law and Social Sciences at London South Bank University in the UK. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.